What up, Prompt Jockeys? We have a very special guest today. One of my best friends, someone I went to high school with, Andrew Holman. Welcome, brother.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
So Andrew's been in the startup game for a while, been slinging SaaS ever since we graduated college, and he is a wizard when it comes to cold outreach, getting meetings booked on the calendar. So he's here to impart some wisdom on us, share his experiences, and teach us how to make sure our calendars are always full.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about, man. You can never have enough top of funnel, both in terms of quality and quantity. Yeah, a little bit more about how I wound up here. I, much like most people, had no idea what I wanted to do after college, graduated with a degree in marketing, and was just like, what can you do with that? And got my first job at working at Prudential over in Rockefeller Center, and you know, was dealing with marketing and sales direct to consumer, trying to push annuities, life insurance, auto insurance, like the whole nine. It was the most fucking boring thing you could possibly imagine. Every single person in the office was a older white male. No diversity, no women. The only women that worked there were secretaries. And I just knew that that was like a very demotivating environment. So I started to talk to more people and saw that there was a high demand in SaaS sales jobs. So I really knew nothing about it. Started interviewing at places and landed my first company, a company called Seros, back in 2017. I was, I think, their fourth ever SDR hire internally. They had outsourced lead gen for a while, and then began to bring it on internally as the company positioned to scale. Was an individual contributor there for a little over 2 years, then was fortunate enough to get to manage my own team. So I started managing a team of anywhere between 8 to 12 people. We received a Series B funding. We went through one of those scaling motions of just like get asses in seats. The team continued to grow. We were fortunate enough throughout COVID-19 to have a product that was in really high demand. So luckily, we weren't really that impacted. We actually raised the Series C 100 million round during in July 2020. And then soon thereafter, I was promoted to a director level role where I oversaw the entire operation domestically in North America. I had a counterpart who oversaw things in the UK. And I was also tasked with forming a completely new function, which we dubbed our junior account executive function. It was sort of an in-between being an SDR and an AE. And they were responsible for full sales cycle prospecting, discovery, everything, all up until negotiation, but more geared towards net retention. So with our current clients, focusing on cross-sell and upsell. So I was there for about a little over 6 years, and now I've spent the last 6 months at a completely different type of company, an HR technology company called Naya, again, based here in New York, where I've had a team of anywhere between 6 to 8 people focusing on top of funnel. Very, very different motion. But yeah, it's just something I've always been passionate about and always, you know, just sort of wakes me up in the morning.
Dude, so something that I think is very unique to you is that, like you said, you are passionate about this stuff and you have embraced the SDR role. Obviously, you're in a managerial position now, but embracing that role and being passionate about it, I think, is what has led to your success. And it's something that I also saw at Google. Like, the top reps at Google were the ones that worked at Yelp, they worked at HomeAdvisor, they worked at Indeed, and they didn't dread the cold calling every day. They embraced it and they got really fucking good at it. And it led to them being like the top killer AEs out there. And you've done something similar where you took the job seriously and made it your own. And I've seen some of the outreach that you've done, and it's very impressive. You approach it differently. So talk to me about your philosophy a bit and how you approach these things.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it obviously depends on what you're trying to accomplish, right? If you're a one-man band just trying to you know, set up a high volume of appointments for a highly transactional type sale, it's definitely different than if you're going to be at a, you know, mid-sized company focusing on, you know, penetrating enterprise mid-market type businesses that are doing 500 mil, a billion in revenue, right? There will always be the aspect of like the set it and forget it, the spray and pray. For the purposes of here, I'll talk more like commercially, and what my experience, what I've seen to be successful and what I've seen to be unsuccessful. The spray and pray, the set it and forget it motion is dying. It's dying very, very quickly, especially if you want to be considered a legitimate operation, right? Like, there's nothing, all of my philosophy, all of my like motions always stem back to just putting myself in the seat of the person I'm trying to get to answer my email, my phone call. What would optimize like their day? What would optimize their experience with me? Again, a complete stranger who, for all they know, I'm some robot created out in India or something. What would it look like if I'm trying to get the entire finance department's attention and all of them receive the exact same word for word email in their inbox 30 seconds apart and they're all sitting in the same office, right? Spam, 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 unsubscribe, 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 right? Like that is, I believe it's not an effective way of getting the right people on the line, right? Because there's always going to be the argument of, do we care about quality or do we care about quantity? And I think it's about blending the two together. Again, it really depends on, hey, are we selling a $500 more transactional software? Or are we selling a software that's, you know, the average order value is between 50, six figures, seven figures, right? It's gonna depend. What I use spray and pray, set it and forget it to do is to sort of funnel out the week, right? I like to analogize a lot of things in the day, in the day to day. And what I would equate, you know, setting a, let's just say I'm going to send out 500 emails today on Instantly or Salesloft or Outreach or whatever it may be, HubSpot. What I want to do then at the end of that day or the first thing the next morning is look at what I got. And let's just say, you know, out of 500, you got a 10% open rate. So you got 50 people to open it. And you don't necessarily have to take a next step there, right? Let's let the sequences do their job, which in my mind is not book the appointments, but it's to tell me who I'm more likely to actually have a conversation with and thus more likely to book said appointments. Yep. So then maybe that was on Monday, maybe then on Wednesday they get round number two. And of those 50 people, another 25 open it for the second time. So what I've done there is I've verified a few things. A, they're approachable via email, which is big, right? Like I have a legitimate chance of getting their attention over email. That's big. That saves me a shit ton of time. With all the bounces, with all the spam traps all out there, that's a really big learning. And B, now I can dive into those 25 people that now should be somewhat familiar with me. And I can really say, okay, of those 25, who is worth my time based on my ideal customer? If I'm trying to get the finance or accounting manager at an organization of 500 people and their finance team is 10 people, did the person, right, was it just an analyst that opened the email twice or was it a manager? If it was the manager, guess what I'm doing? I'm taking him or her out of that sequence. And now I am putting them to the side. And I'm saying you've won the jackpot. You have now won my attention for the remainder of my outreach. And I'm going in and I'm getting in the trenches and I'm beginning to do research on the person. I'm beginning to do research on the company. Obviously, this is a very, very, it's a very, very manual process. And there's a bunch of tools out there that, you know, can help you along with, so to speak, personalized email writing. But I've always found it to be the most effective to pick something or multiple things that you know really, really well and utilize that. For example, Joe and I are big sports guys. if I'm trying to get the attention of the finance manager and I see that they're in Massachusetts or I see that they went to a big name college, I'm referencing the Patriots or I'm referencing LSU or FSU in the subject line. I'm writing one or two sentences and I'm saying, hey, I'm going to go out on a limb here, seeing that you're over in Boston, and say that you're a Patriots fan. As a self-loathing Jets fan, I got to say, it looks like it's going to be a long year for the both of us. And then I'm going directly into value prop, CTA, and I'm ending it there. And it takes me no longer than 90 seconds to write that email. So then I can write 20, 25, 30, 50 of them. I'm a big proponent of the thought process of 100 highly personalized crafted emails a week is much more effective, if is just as effective, if not more effective, than 2,000 canned generic emails. Again, because you always need to be keeping in the back of your mind, who is it that you want to get on the phone? Are you happy with getting a finance analyst on the phone who has no buying power, who's three rungs below a decision maker? Or is it worth your while to actually go more towards the top? It's always a conversation about opportunity cost. But I guess in closing, personalization is key. And this is just with regard to email, right? Obviously, if someone's opened a couple of emails first, I'm calling them first and foremost. This is the first thing I'm doing because I want to get my answers quick. This is a game of opportunity cost. It's saying, if I'm going to spend an hour from noon to one making dials, that's an hour that I don't get back during that day, researching client, researching prospects, writing emails, doing admin work, whatever it may be. And so you really have to have an intrinsic, very, very deep down appreciation and understanding for your ideal customers, because that should always just be dictating where your emotions go throughout the day.
That's really fucking smart. I wish that I spoke to you about this when I was still a BDR. I was a horrible fucking BDR. When I worked at Google, I was really bad. And then when I got AE roles later on, I would do spray and pray. And I would hope that my BDRs brought me leads or that things came in inbound. And obviously, it never worked out that way. I think that regardless of whether you're starting your own company or you're an AE or you're an like top of funnel is the most important and the most challenging aspect of the job.
Yeah.
And it's something that everyone always wants to automate and get off their plates. But if you're really, really good at it and really pay attention to it, that's how you build pipeline. That's how you build businesses.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of you go through the opens and you see who your potential warm interest is there. What are your thoughts on like the length of the initial email? Because what you're doing, it sounds like they might be a little bit longer, but you could kind of ignore the conventional wisdom that says longer is bad in this case because the personalization makes up for it. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say overall it's accurate, but brevity is important, like being concise. Because here's what I'm offering to them by taking 5 minutes of my time to research them as an individual, right? Gong did a really, really good webinar a couple of years ago about personalization at scale. And what you want to think about is the 9 to 5, what the person cares about during the hours of 9 to 5. And if you can find out anything about their 5 to 9, what they care about after work, you're golden, right? So if I say, all right, Joe, he's an entrepreneur, he's a self-starter, he's probably always looking for ways to increase efficiencies, save money, and I have a product that does that, that's great. And I also find out by doing some snooping, right? By doing some true hunting, that he's an avid softball fan. Guess what I'm doing? I'm Googling something about softball and now I'm throwing that in the subject line. What I'm doing by that, by saying, hey, Joe, I've just invested some time in you, is I'm hopefully asking for you to give me the time of your day to just read what I have to say. So in that sense, right? I mean, it's pretty logical, right? And of course, what percentage of the time does this work? I couldn't tell you that, because there's always going to be the people that have a strict no email reading policy from vendors I don't recognize, or whatever it is, right? However, I, like just logically speaking, intuitively speaking, like that's what I'm doing by that. I'm saying, Joe, please just read what I have to say. And guess what? Also, like, if you're reading it and I see that you're coming back to it multiple times, I'm going to do it again. It's a war of attrition, right? It doesn't work on the first touch, second touch all the time. You have to also pick people that you're going to be able to have ammunition for to write 3, 4, 5 personalized emails over the course of 2 weeks. But that's not to say that you shouldn't always have brevity in the back of your mind. In my mind, it's like, I care about the subject line a lot because that's the first thing that's going to get someone's attention, right? If you're looking at email on the phone, you have subject line, and then you maybe have the first line. If you're looking at email on your computer, you have a little bit more of the first line showing. So it's like, you know, for the softball reference, it's like, you know, Jenny Finch is my idol, and Joe's like, what the hell? I don't know, because I know nothing about softball. And in the first sentence, I'm saying, hey, Joe, saw on LinkedIn or saw on Twitter or whatever it is, like, you can't cross that line of like what's thoughtful versus what's creepy. And in my mind, if I'm referencing something that is publicly available, that's not creepy, right? If I'm referencing your family or something like that, of course that's fucking creepy, right? But I'm getting right into it. Hey, Joe, so you're an avid softball fan, or so you're an avid.
What's the subject line in that case?
I'd Google, like, you know, best softball bat, or, you know, best softball tournament, or just anything like play a lot of softball this summer, right? Like, ask a question, something that is just going to be different than whatever everything else you're seeing. And so again, it's the first step to get your attention and to hopefully read what I have to say. First one or two sentences is about you. And I'm not really talking about myself at all or the product. And I'm using the word I as least as possible. Say, hey, Joe, saw you're an avid softball player. You know, we got some, so you're an avid softball player and that you're down in Florida. You must have had some great weather this year, hit any home runs, right? Something corny, but also, like, it's never a bad idea to sort of fluff the person up. People love to be the center of attention. And then it doesn't really matter. I'm just going directly in. Second paragraph, two sentences about what my product does and why other people buy it. And then third sentence is like CTA. It could be as short as that. And it's difficult because some products have a more complicated value prop. They have multiple value propositions. But again, it then goes back to having a deep understanding of that person, of your persona, right? Yeah, like when I was at Cerus, we were selling to marketers, and the content marketing persona has a lot different, has a much different day to day and cares about much different things, although they all lead up to the same goals, than a product marketer. And I needed to know those differences inside and out, because if I'm talking to a content marketer about things that a product marketer cares about, I'm losing all credibility right away.
And then, so talk to me about let's say you want to do the cold call.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's say you send your personal, they open it again.
Yep.
Now you want to go in for the cold call.
Yep.
What are you going to open up? Like, how long is it going to be? How many of those can you bang through in an hour? Because I think a lot of this manual stuff in people's heads, even myself included, I'm like, nah, that takes too much fucking time. But with what you're saying there, you can standardize that second and third paragraph and personalize the first one.
Yep.
Bang through those in like an hour.
Yep.
Now the cold call, talk to me about that.
Yeah. I mean, no, to your point, like, if you're just reaching out to CFOs and the value prop doesn't change, you're copy and pasting the second and third paragraph. So you can bang out a lot. And also, like, what I tell reps when they're like telling me, oh, this is too burdensome, it takes too long, I'm like, yeah, it takes too long today. The goal in sales with all of these different crafts, whether it's email writing, cold calling, filling out admin shit in your CRM, is to get incrementally better over time. That's why you do call practices, right? You listen to bad calls that people made and you provide actionable feedback so that next week they come back feeling a lot more confident, hopefully, right? But obviously, if you don't have the desire, the coachability, right? They call it, like, a lot of places call it will, skill, and hill, right? Do you have the will? Do you have the skill? Do you have any sort of, like, natural ability? And are you able to climb the hill? Right. And if you're lacking in certain areas, then, you know, I don't know. I really don't know if you're going to be successful. That's why, you know, a lot of these jobs look for self-motivated, self-starters, entrepreneurial, because you are an entrepreneur. Even if you're a BDR at Salesforce, you are an entrepreneur in the sense that you have a territory. It's not getting bigger and it's hopefully not getting smaller. And you have to extract the most amount of value out of that territory as possible, much like an entrepreneur, right? But going back to the cold call, I'll give you an example. So I was covering for a rep of mine over the summer. Their territory was like the upper Midwest. So like Ohio, Minnesota, Wisconsin, right? Place in the country that I've never fucking been to. And I honestly don't plan on ever going to. And I was going through these people's LinkedIns, was identifying the right people that I wanted to enter into like a personalized sequence, thus like write a personalized email and then follow up with a call either next day or same day if I saw they opened it. And just be imaginative. Like, this is where the beauty of it comes into play, because it's only cumbersome if you can't think outside the box. Right. And every single person, I don't care who you are, is able to think outside the box. Like, we all played with fucking toys in our childhood, hopefully, and had some sort of imagination. So I went to this woman's LinkedIn. It was bare, it had nothing. Her job title, her history, where she went to college, and that she lived somewhere in Minnesota, but it had the exact city in Minnesota. I'm like, all right, fuck it. This is someone I really, really want to talk with. She was like an instrumental person in that territory. I Googled the town in Minnesota, followed by restaurants. I picked one restaurant. I said, have you ever been to Giuseppe's? Right. hopefully like, okay, that's right. Like, if you were to throw in an obscure restaurant in Forest Hills, New York, where I grew up, like that would get my attention. She opened it. She didn't answer. And then I followed up with a call, like, 20 minutes later, and I said, hey, this is I was pretending to be someone else, but whatever. I said, hey, this is Andrew calling from Naya. How you doing? I'm the guy. And I dove right into it. I'm the guy that shot you over an email about Giuseppe's before. How you doing? Right? Like, I'm establishing right away that I'm the guy that's like really putting in some effort here. And she was taken back. She was like, oh, you know, nice, thanks for the call. What can I do for you? And, you know, to sort of like disband any of the awkwardness, I was like, yeah, you know, honestly, like, I hope that didn't come off weird. It's just that if I'm trying to get someone's attention, I like to put in some thought and some research. I hope you don't mind, right? And again, the self-deprecation angle, like, a lot of salespeople use it, some people don't, because at the end of the day, I'm just doing my job. But I wanted to give her the proper context. And then she was like, oh no, actually, that's sort of thoughtful. Boom. I'm in. I'm going to have a conversation with her, because the thing about cold calling is that no matter who you are, when you see an unknown number, like calling your phone, your guard goes way up, because you're expecting it to be someone trying to sell you something over in China or whatever. Someone trying to pitch you something that you don't need.
Someone trying to bother you. Someone interrupting your thing.
Yeah. Maybe they're going to try and steal your identity, whatever it is.
Yeah.
However, I think as humans, we have a natural curiosity to say, let me answer this, right? Maybe it's my friend, or maybe I have been expecting a call, or maybe it's a lawyer calling to tell me that I had a great aunt over in Virginia I never knew about and died, and she left me $1 million, right? Like, whatever, we have
maybe
the curiosity.
I saw my softball game last night. Maybe this is Brian Cashman. I said, maybe this is Brian Cashman. He saw me play softball.
Yeah, right? You have that natural curiosity, but the guard is up. And I want to do everything in my power within those first 15, 30 seconds to get that guard as low as possible. And some people, you're just never going to be able to, because, again, they have a policy, or that's just who they are, or they woke up on the wrong side of the bed, they're getting divorced, whatever it may be. I like to do like a little like, hey, this is Andrew, like a little laughter in my voice, because tone is everything. There's a big difference between saying like, hey, this is Andrew versus, hey, this is Andrew, how you doing today? You know, like that right there could kill any sort of conversation. The great thing about personalizing emails out, like any sort of outreach, LinkedIn, it becomes your phone script, right? Like, all I did was reference the email. That's not the reason why I'm calling, by the way, right? So it goes something like this. Hey, it's Andrew calling from Naya. How you doing? Yeah, sorry. I was the one who sent you an email about Giuseppe's before. Yeah, I always like to do some research on folks when I'm trying to get their attention. I think it's the least I can do. The place does look delicious. But anyways, sorry to call you out of the blue. The reason for my call is, and I go into, right? Like, why are you going to find value in not hanging up on me even, right? Like, I can't expect that, or they're not obligated to give me any more of their time than they've already given me. And I want to establish credibility. I want to establish, you know, that I'm being thoughtful, and then I want to get right into it, right? There's a lot of schools of thought on it. A lot of people will say, hey, it's Andrew. This is a cold call, right? And they get it, the awkwardness out of the way. And I've seen that work. Some people say, hey, it's Andrew. You mind if I borrow 27 seconds of your time? They pick an obscure number because the person's not expecting it. And they just say, sure, right? However you want to do it, that's up to you. But yeah, it's about establishing some level of credibility. And then I am very, very quick to delivering value. Right. Because I can't ask for time. I can't ask for a meeting if I haven't delivered any sort of value. The person, if they do say yes, they're not going to show up.
Yeah, I've seen and I've used it before too, where you try as hard as you can to pretend it's not a cold call, or you pretend you're not a sales guy. Like, I had a guy at Google I used to work with, and on the phone he would say, like, this is not a sales call. Like, I am not a salesperson. And it was a sales call. And then like one of the managers overheard, and he was like, no, I take the opposite approach, and I let them know, like, I am a salesperson. This is a sales call, and I'm going to sell you something right now. And I think that just attacking it head on the sort of way that you do, where you get the awkwardness out of the way, but they know what's good. Like, they know you're a salesperson, and if you're upfront about it, they may respect it and give you the actual time, especially if you took the research like you typically do.
Yeah. On that note, I mean, I think there's the interesting concept of the I versus R, which is very like that struggle. I versus R being your identity versus your role in sales, where it's like, my role is an SDR or an AE or a VP of sales. It's not my identity. It's not who I am. And as long as you're like not selling something that's, you know, goes against any of your moral beliefs, you should buy into your role. It's only going to help you. But if you are like embarrassed, or, you know, like you tiptoe around that, that's what gives salespeople the bad reputation, right? Obviously, there's many things that give people a bad reputation because people are trying to sell snake oil out there. But you want to be your own individual person and hopefully go against the grain when it comes to that. I would always buy into it.
There is no way around this stuff. If you're an SDR, if your goal is to be an AE, if your goal is to be an entrepreneur, you have to get good at this at some point. And if you're not and you're still successful, you will only be more successful if you get good at this top of funnel. It's a superpower. If you're able to call people, email people out of the blue and convert them into paying customers, you have a superpower that is extremely desirable. And you essentially have a money printer at that point.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people try to outsource or automate as much of this as possible, when in reality, if you just got really good at it, and I'm not saying I've actually done this because I made the mistake in the past. I just wished away my SDR, my AE roles, but no matter what, it always comes back. Like, you always get into these positions where you have to do cold outreach. And that's the one thing that's holding back your business, holding back your career success. So it's very, very important to actually apply these concepts and take it seriously.
I find it fascinating because from a top of funnel perspective, like if you look at the like what you're able to actually do and what it leads to, you literally create something out of nothing. You create a paying customer out of a name in your CRM, right? Out of a target account. When I talk to like new reps, right? Because most of the reps that I've had to onboard, and like literally this is their first time ever picking up the phone. I phrase it to them like this: like, cold calling is not fun for most people. And we talk about like the psychology behind it. And really it stems back to the cavemen, right? Like, not to get too deep, but it stems back to like these intrinsic fears that are ingrained in all human beings. Because when we were cavemen, if you were not accepted by the group, You died. You had no food. You had no shelter. This is very, very similar, right? You're afraid of being told no. You're afraid of the uncertain. And once you're able to just like understand that, hey, and hopefully you're in an environment where this sort of conversation is encouraged, where it's like, if you fuck up on a cold call, I'm not going to raise my hand to you. I'm not going to slap your wrist. I'm not going to yell at you. I'm going to commend you, right? Because that's the only way to get better, especially at this. But it's also a skill that, like you're saying, Joe, it's invaluable if you have any sort of aspirations at all, because it's going to teach you a lot of things. It's going to teach you critical thought, because script or no script, I am a huge, huge fan of being like, your script is the first 20 seconds and then it's improv. Because no matter how good of a script I provide, you're always going to have to go off it when you least expect it, or right away, right? So it's going to teach you how to think more critically on the spot, which is a great, great, just like intellectual game to play. It's also going to teach you how to read. It's also going to teach you your EQ levels, how to read people, right? Because you can't see their face. You don't know what sort of, right? Like communication is a lot of like visual cues. We can only go based off of how they sound and their tone. So if I start up here and a minute in, they're remaining down here, I probably want to go a little bit lower, because people feel more comfortable around those that are
the mirroring. Yeah,
exactly. That tone mirroring is like, you know, it's used across all enterprise sales structures and methodologies. And yeah, I mean, it's going to teach you public speaking skills. It's an invaluable skill. It really, really is. And obviously it fucking helps you grow hair on your chest.
Yes.
Like
the first client we got for that container business, the Mod Better website that I have, I cold called Belmont, dude. I cold called Belmont just out of the blue. And like the feeling that I had when they said like, yeah, like send me a quote, like we do actually need this stuff. Like you feel like you conquered the world. Like you said before, you just turned something that didn't previously exist into something, into a sale with just your words. And it's a very empowering feeling, but that didn't make the next call any easier. I still want to procrastinate. I still don't want to do it. Even though I've seen it work, my brain still tells me, nah, just send a few emails or just take the easy way out. Just automate a bunch of shit. But the success comes from that uncomfortability. And if you're able to push, the more you can push through that uncomfortability, the more successful you'll be in any of this shit.
The beauty about the phones too is like, you know, I'll have someone on my team come up to me and be like, yo, phones are dry today. And I'll be like, great. Law of averages will say tomorrow they're going to be on fucking fire. So you know what you should do? You should make more calls tomorrow. Beauty about it is like, you're having a shit day. Maybe you got told no from a deal that was, moving along in the pipeline. You can't buy a conversation with someone over email, LinkedIn, and the phones. And it's like 4:30 and you're like, all right, the day's wrapping up. I have the choice to log off early and fucking have a beer and start making dinner, or say, you know what? I'm going to put an extra half hour into calls today, because literally a 2-minute call could change your entire perspective on the day, on the week, on the month. It could be the difference between missing quota and hitting it. That's the beauty of it. It's also the curse, right? Because there are also going to be those days and those weeks where you're like mind numbing. All I hear are dial tones, gatekeepers, people telling me to fuck off. And I think going back to like what you were saying, Joe, is like, it is really, really satisfying to know that you were able to fight in the weight class of like a C-suite person, bring them down on a call, book an appointment, have it become a customer. But then you're like, fuck, like, how do I keep doing this? And my advice would always be like, you gotta have some sort of discipline and create a routine for yourself. So like,
I think you have a good routine. I think that's actually, it all goes back to what you said earlier. If you structure it so that it's, you don't have to cold call everyone. You could do your cadences. You send out the cadences. Whoever opens it, maybe whoever opens it 3 times, that's who you start off with. That's who you start doing the call. And then it also in your head, you're like, well, they opened my email, so they might be somewhat interested. And it makes you a little less scared, because you might be more confident because you think they're interested to begin with. And they might not be, but that confidence, you could ride that momentum a bit.
Yeah, no, 100%. And again, right, like it's for anyone who's like struggling or like this is a pretty lame plug, but honestly, the Fanatical Prospecting by Jeb Blount is the best book I've ever read on sales. He talks about the three things that you can control: your actions, your reactions, and your mindset. And it's strictly mindset. It's like you just got to get up, get your coffee, have a fucking banana or an apple. So I'm going to give you some energy. Walk around the room, make your dials, right? And just do it every day. And don't let a small sample size, i.e. today being slow on the phones, dictate what you're going to do tomorrow. Consistency in this game is the hardest thing to come by. And if you are inconsistent with your inputs, you're going to be inconsistent with your outputs. And you have to understand and sign up for the mantra that the work you put in today does not pay off tomorrow. It, like, simply put, like the shit I'm doing today as a rep is going to feed my, it's going to put food on my plate next month. And if I slack right now, I might end the month well, but I'm going to be struggling next month and I'm going to be behind. I'm going to have to work late. I'm going to be more anxious. If you are just fucking consistent every day you show up to work, like that is the biggest thing.
So what you've seen a lot of good reps, a lot of bad reps in your day. What do the most successful reps do that differentiates them from the ones that are bad? And again, I'm not in a corporate setting anymore, but this is very valuable info for me because I need to get good at top of funnel. So I think it's applicable regardless of where you, as long as you're in a position that you're trying to generate revenue.
Yep.
I want to know what the best of the best are doing. Even if they're a kid fresh out of college, that's an SDR. Like, there's stuff I could learn from him. Like, what are the best ones doing?
Yeah. So my best rep that I have right now, and she is doing on the month right now, she's doubling the second best rep. Like, she is leagues ahead. And, you know, obviously what you want to do is you want to extract what she's doing and scale it out. But that's just not the case. Like, that's not, you're never going to be able to do that because working in sales is such a wide range of personalities, skills, strengths, weaknesses.
And some kids just have it. Like, there is skill involved. Some kid, like, I've seen, they have a magic touch. They're very, very good. Like, there's a lot, you can copy exactly what they're doing word for word and they just have it. Like, they have a gift.
Yep.
But there's definitely things that you could learn.
And alternatively, like, what she's doing to be successful here may not make her successful if she were doing it another job, but she's mastered how to do it here, right? And what she does is she's very, very detail-oriented. She holds herself to a strict routine that always incorporates finding new leads, no matter how manual or how long it takes. She's always constantly thinking about next week and next month, right? And she's very, very good with her process. She's very good with her time. She doesn't waste time. She rarely has to pick up the phone. She does this all through email. Now, if you go back to Saros, my best two reps that come to mind at Saros were fucking sharks on the phones. One of them, we had a dialer, you know, so obviously not everyone has access to one of those things that dials, you know, either multiple numbers at once or just goes down a list. But she would do like 3 hours of dialing a day and book three meetings. And she would, she never, like, I think it was like 9 months straight, she was the top of the leaderboard. She was so valuable to that company that we were paying her close to double the salary of an average rep just to retain her as an SDR, because we knew she didn't have it. She didn't have like the skills necessary to be a closer. But we didn't want her to leave. So we were like, you are way too valuable. You are sourcing the same amount of pipeline that three reps are doing, right? And it was just because she was a shark on the phone. My next best rep was fearless. She would cold call CMOs at Fortune 500 companies at 8 o'clock in the morning. She came from a world. She was a gorgeous girl. She was a model and she was a recruiter. And that she was essentially just like constantly in cutthroat worlds where people were putting you down, insulting you, right? Telling you you're too fat or yada, yada, yada. And then as a recruiter, it's essentially like sales, but again, people treat you more like shit, arguably. And you're a lot more disposable because someone may be talking to seven recruiters at once, right? She was fearless. She would cold call whoever it was at 8 o'clock in the morning, at whenever, at 6 p.m. at night. just so long as it gives her an opportunity to get her in front of people, right? Those are like the intangibles, right? Those are the things that people do without being explicitly told. They just know that it's going to put them in a better position. I would say like the explicit skills that like you can also teach to be really good organization's like a quarter of this job. You wake up every day, you have your urgent tasks versus your important. What is an urgent task in sales? Something that is going to lead to pipeline or something that is going to lead to a deal or expediting a deal, moving a deal along. That is the shit I have to make sure I get done today. What's important? It's like your overhead. No matter how much you're selling or how much you're doing, you still have to do it. You still have to prospect. You have to set and forget. You have to make your dials, right? But the urgent dials are the ones who they're nurture dials or they're follow-ups or they're, you know, you got disconnected or whatever it is. Organizing that so that you understand every single day, what do I have to get done today to have a productive day? I'd say you have to have some sort of creativity if you really want to master top of funnel. Because again, the ones who are just like, nah, I'm just going to set and forget 2,000 contacts and it's going to be a numbers game for me. That's great. You might do well, but again, that is not transferable. That might work at one business and it's not going to work at the next. And then you have to have some competitive nature to you. You have to have it bother you. Where if Joe and I are on the same team, like, yeah, we fucking love each other, but I also want to kill Joe. I want to be able to say I'm top dog. I don't want Joe to beat me because then Joe can hold it over me and I have to buy him beers next time I'm out, right? Yeah. You have to have some sort of like competitive nature, hopefully coupled with like aspirations, right? Like I want to be competitive. I also want to be a team player, but I know that if I'm competitive and I grit my teeth through this all, it's going to elicit opportunities for me. Like I've seen, I'll give you a prime example. I hired a girl at Saros in the midst of COVID and she started in June 2020. I will never forget. She's fucking fantastic. She was a great SDR. She was an SDR for about a year. Then she joined our program of like in between SDR and AE. She did that for about 6 months. She grit her teeth. She was sourcing all of her own deals, trying to close some of them. She didn't close any. She still got promoted to AE because they wanted to invest in her. She was been an AE at Saros for a year and a half. Now she just got a job at Google as an AE. She probably doubled her OTE in the course of 2 years and is 26 years old. You know, 25.
Yeah, dude, that is the thing. Because if you want to get those jobs at Google, and because I remember, right? It's like, oh, I'm working at, because I interned at Indeed, and it feels very boiler room at those companies. It's a big sales pit, and I'm sure it's different with remote now. But you're like, damn, I could have just gone straight from high school and worked here. Like, what was the point of even going to school? And it's very easy to get down on yourself. But the ones who do take it seriously and are fearless, like you said, Google, Facebook, they want those types of killers that cut their teeth in the small startup grind and succeed there. And then they'll recruit afterwards. And if being an entrepreneur is your goal, again, this all makes you a good, like entrepreneurs are good at sales. So unless you're a dev, like a godlike dev or whatever, you're going to have to, sales is going to be your role at your startup. So you got to get good at this stuff. And if you are a good SDR, good AE, it'll lead to being essentially a good entrepreneur at the end of the day.
Yeah. But what you can't do is get comfortable behind the computer and say, right? Because again, like I know people back when I was in IC, like 85% of my pipeline came from email just because I got so good at the process and I really understood the market and the product inside out. So I rarely had to pick up the phone. But that is bad, especially if you want to be like more entrepreneurial minded, because you're going to have to fucking talk to people like face to face over the phone. You're going to have to deal with difficult questions, right? Like another like great mantra for people getting starting out is like, get comfortable with the uncomfortable. Like it is very corny, but it is very, very true. The more uncomfortable positions you put yourself in, the less uncomfortable it'll be the next time it pops up, and it's going to pop up. It still comes back to me.
Like things I avoided as an SDR 7 years ago are still popping up today. You know what I mean? And it's like you have to at some point you're going to have to break through that. And it's not, you're going to have to keep breaking through it. Like, yo, I don't know if you've seen the show about WeWork, We Crashed. And whatever you think about that guy, Adam Newman, bro, he was the most insane salesperson that there was. He had zero fear. He built a $1 billion net worth. He couldn't code. He couldn't design, nothing. He was just pure sales, man. And he would not take no for an answer.
Yeah. I mean, they say like a lot of like sales, you know, like a lot of people I've seen on my team who are having like good months will be like, yeah, you know, I'm getting lucky. And there's definitely a component that we can't control to all of this, right? Like, how do I know that the only reason this guy answered my email was because he sat down to take a shit and he just so happened to check his phone the moment it came through, right? Like, I don't know. I can't control that. But the more preparation I do, the luckier I tend to be, right? Like that, I will live and stand by that for forever.
100%. So what about when marketing comes into play? Let's say you get in touch with someone, they're like, hey, Andrew, this sounds pretty cool, but I'm not ready right now. Because what I noticed in a lot of my AE roles was that when it came to outbound, I would get in touch and then they would essentially come back to me a few months later and be ready to buy. A lot of the actual deal flow is coming inbound, but outbound was good for getting people's attention. And then a few months later, they may reach back out. So how do you keep that relationship with them and keep them aware of your product if they're not in the buying position at this moment?
Yeah, I think it all starts with like, whenever someone tells me something that like the disposition is not necessarily positive, although like I would consider that a positive disposition, like interest timing, right, would be the disposition you see on one of the sales engagement tools. I want to know why, right? Like, just out of curiosity, just so I can take something back to the team. Why is now a difficult time? Because the answers run the gamut. Oh, I'm about to go on maternity leave. We're having layoffs. We're heads down because we're trying to get a new product out the door. I just need to understand why, because again, as a rep, it's all about opportunity costs. And if you think about like the marketing sales funnel in its totality, you're having that initial conversation with someone, and let's just say they're at the very top and they're just, it's pure play awareness. And they're like, yeah, timing's not right because, you know, if Aurum was cold calling me or, you know, one of these like dialer companies, I'd say, yeah, it's pretty bad timing, right? We're going through a lot of shifts. Also, like, I don't have that big of a team to necessitate a product like this because I know it's expensive. Very, very legitimate excuse, right? To not meet. Because I literally just don't have a need for your product. So if I'm the Aurum rep, I'm jotting that down. I'm jotting that note down. I'm saying, fuck this company. I'm not spending any time with them because they literally will never be in a position to buy my product. It's important to understand that versus someone who's saying like, yeah, reach back out in a couple of months. We just have a lot of things going on, right? Then again, it goes back to the organization play. Regardless of what marketing is doing, right? Because I think whether you're an entrepreneur or you're working at a mid-sized company, your marketing resources are always going to be very, very limited, and they're always going to be jumping around from campaign and initiative, right?
Sure.
So I want to make sure that like that lead that I found in August is going to pay dividends in November. So what am I doing? I'm fucking utilizing the tools that the company gives me to make that happen in your CRM, right? Or I'm just jotting it down. I'm putting a calendar invite for my own calendar on November 3rd saying follow up with Joe, right? It's about being organized. As a manager, the one thing that really, really rubs me the wrong way is when we have things fall through the cracks. And the easiest way for things to fall through the cracks is just by purely being disorganized.
Yeah, bro, you would have hated me if I worked for you. I would have been fired real quick. Would have been a nightmare. What about when it comes to actually hiring reps, right? Because I think this is something that one day I'm going to need to get a lot better at. How do you go about the hiring process? Like, how do you know when you got a good one sort of in the interview room? Because I think that even when I've been hiring contractors throughout the years, I've been way too overly optimistic And based on their credentials or what they say, I'm like, all right, this person's going to be a superstar. And next thing you know, they fall off real quick. So how do you manage like bringing on good people and then setting them up for success so that they actually get shit done?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, right? Like there, I remember like the first couple of interviews I did, everyone else who had interviewed them all had dissenting opinions than me, simply just because I had the rose colored glasses on. There's definitely like the experience portion of it where you eventually hear things that you're just like, that's a red flag. All right, I'll give them one strike. Like when someone says like, what's your biggest weakness? I take on too much. Oh, so you're actually fucking complimenting yourself by telling me that that's a weakness. Like, I hate that shit. Obviously, different people look for different things depending on the company. But I'd like to get a sense of, A, is this person remotely intelligent? Like, are they going to be able to pick up the complex subject matter that I'm going to have to teach them? Give me an intelligent person any day over a dumb person who's just like, I'm going to get on the fucking phones, right? Because the intelligent person will be able to understand the market, understand the value prop, understand the product, hopefully be a little bit more curious. And then they're going to forge their own path on how to get the job done the best way, as long as I'm there for support. So I really care about getting that intelligence, right? I'll ask them, like, what'd you study in school? What was the hardest class you took? What'd you think of calculus, right? Like, shit that they're not expecting, that I just want to get a sense of, like, are you smart? And then the second level is accountability, right? Like, am I going to be able to fucking trust this person? And that's the hardest thing to interview for. Because these roles, right, you're interviewing a lot of green employees or people who are trying to switch jobs. And they think it's going to be cool. They're going to work for a tech company. They're going to get fucking lunch. They're going to have dogs in the office or whatever it is. You get a lot of freedom in this job, especially in remote world. And I just have to know, when my back is turned, are you going to be getting shit done? And I don't want to find out in month three that it was all a facade. So I will ask them like pointed questions, like tell me a time in your life when someone was like needed you or was relying on you. Could be professional, could be academic, could be personal, whatever it is. But tell me how you reacted to that. Tell me what you did, right? It could be fucking anything. My mom needed me to walk the dog for a week while I was away and I had to drive over, you know, like whatever it is. I just want to know, like, I'm going to bring a certain level of accountability to the table. Are you going to match it? Or are you going to at least give me the effort? Because if not, you're not going to make it and I'm not going to invest the time in you.
Definitely.
And as it pertains to like longer term, you got to think about it in terms of three things I think are really important. You have your autonomy, you have your mastery, and that is supported by your purpose, right? So the first 3-6 months, it's about building the autonomy with the rep, right? Do they feel comfortable using our technology? Do they feel comfortable writing emails, making calls on their own, knowing that they're going to get consistent feedback from me, right? Are they essentially able to do the job to a high degree by themselves? When they're only coming to me, right? And then obviously my job is to pick out early indicators that are going to prove otherwise. Or if they're really picking up on it, keep them fucking challenged. Then you work on the mastery, where they ask you a question, you don't give them the answer. You say, what is your answer? And then depending on their answer, you sort of like guide them to the answer, right? Mm-hmm. But you make it so that they have to figure out everything on their fucking own and you become redundant. Like that is the goal with any rep, is for the manager to become redundant. A, so that they feel more empowered. B, so that you can spend time with other people that need it. And C, it's about, or not C, but the third component is like instilling like purpose and making sure that they don't forget about it, right? Like, what is your purpose here? My purpose is to book meetings. No, your purpose is to make sure that the lights don't go off, right? Like you are a very, very important person to this company, even if you're low on the totem pole. You've arguably been tasked with the hardest job in the entire company, right? Don't forget that.
Yeah, from a business, it is the hardest. I think so. Like,
yeah, and like, don't forget that, and then don't also forget about your like the wider purpose, which is I want to like try and see if this is for me, and if this is a career that I'm going to excel at and be able to make a lot of money, take on more responsibility, so on and so forth.
I think that's good advice. That's good feedback. What about I've seen some reps do it really well. Like I've seen Gong's reps do social selling really well, where they build up their own little personal brand on LinkedIn, And I've seen others do it really bad, where they're just reposting marketing collateral. It's very bland. How much time would you put in as a rep trying to build up that sort of persona versus the more tried and true methods of campaigns, personalized emails, cold calls? How would you balance that out? Or would you even put effort into it?
I think it depends, right? Like, I've seen some of those gong posts that have like 10,000 likes, right?
And it's an employee. It's like an SDR.
Yeah, but it's like, to me, it's like, is Gong like is this like all an act internally where like Gong is like promoting this post, like they're putting money behind it just so that, right? Like it's a plug, like it's an actual campaign. They're just getting someone on the team to make a post.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Yeah, because it's like, yo, like just because you're a fucking AE at Gong does not mean you're fucking Einstein, right? Like that product probably sells itself, and I guarantee you, it's getting a lot harder to sell it because that industry is getting really, really saturated, and they're super expensive. But anyway, I think it depends on your market. If the people you're trying to get the attention of spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, like salespeople do, because salespeople are fucking always constantly looking for, I don't know, some words of advice from a sales leader, like Gary Vee or whatever, or they're looking for another job, right?
Like you see a blog post and it's like the 10 subject lines that work 80% of the time. Yeah. You're like, fuck, I'm gonna copy these.
This one trick changed my discovery process, right? It's like, oh, great. Like that's actually very valuable to me. So it's no surprise that people at fucking Gong and these other, these other revenue related tools get a lot of attention on LinkedIn. I rarely see like an AE at an accounting software get the same sort of recognition, or maybe my algorithm's different. I don't know.
Very true.
I think it's important to maintain like a human approach on social, right? Like I've seen some posts from people who are just like, they're posting about what their workout regimen is. And like, that's cool. I think it really depends on who you are too. Like there's also no point in being like a phony. Like if you're an outwardly facing like extrovert, like for sure, like it can't hurt. Because at the end of the day, this is all about like the subconscious, right? Like you just want people to fucking remember Joe DiRico. You want them to remember your name and your company. So that, hey, like, who knows? Maybe a business problem does arise and they're like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy on LinkedIn. You know, let me Google that firm or that company. Oh, wow. This is actually really interesting.
If your rep reaches out, let's say you're the CEO of a startup and you post a lot on LinkedIn and your rep reaches out, the person might be like, oh, yeah, I've actually heard of you guys. I see your CEO like posting pictures of his dog on LinkedIn or whatever it is. Like then there's at least some sort of a warm intro there.
It also has to do with the brand, I think, too. Some brands are like, they probably don't appreciate a salesperson being so like blasé on LinkedIn because of their reputation. You know, most of these startups and entrepreneurs, like they could give a shit because all they want is eyeballs, right? They just want clicks. But yeah, like if I was a rep at like Philips, like, I don't know, or like, yeah, like Baker Hughes, like social selling is probably really something that I don't invest in because I'm gearing towards like older people who probably don't spend that much time on LinkedIn or probably might not even have one. I don't know. But yeah, as far as it pertains to like the tech industry, it's important to have some sort of presence, I think, and send your connections. And what I've been seeing, you know, be very successful recently is sending voice notes. Once you connect with people, you can send voice notes through the mobile app on LinkedIn. And it's a very, very human way of just being like, hey, want to put a voice to the name? How you doing? Here's what I got. Are you interested in learning more? Otherwise, tell me to fuck off, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah. A lot of good advice in here, man. I appreciate you coming on and helping the prom jockeys out. I think, like we said, regardless of where you're at, the information here is applicable. And if you're trying to drive revenue, whatever the role is, you could take something out of this. So again, man, appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on.
Of course, brother.
Any closing thoughts? Any like, what's your favorite interview question?
I like asking, what was the hardest class you took in college?
That's like your favorite one?
Or what's your biggest fear? And people will usually say, like, rejection. And I'll say, really? More than dying?
Huh.
Like, to see, just to see what they say. Because, like, if you ask me what my biggest fear is, I'd be like, my parents dying or me dying, right? Like, if you're going to tell me that your biggest fear is, you know, rejection, I'd be like, I'd call you out on it and I'd challenge you and I'd see how you react. But, you know, I have a very...
Dude, my old job, the kid used to ask, if you were the starting shooting guard for your college team, would you rather hit the buzzer beater at home or on the road? That was his go-to.
That's a good one. I thought it was going to be, would you rather make the final shot or make the assist on the final shot? But that's a good one.
That is a good
one. What was he looking for? Like, what? Like, I'd probably say on the road, honestly.
I'm sure he's looking for on the road, but I guess you could justify it either way. But I'm sure he wanted on the road.
That's a good one. I might use that.
Give it a shot. All right, yo. Thank you, brother. Appreciate your time.
All right, brother. I'll talk with you soon.
Peace out.